I do think that Pat Narduzzi has, it's funny when like we talk about like my attitude towards Pitt right now and what everybody else is saying about Pitt. It is funny to just hear Pat in full-on coach mode when it comes to how he's viewing SMU. I mean, just absolute ultimate, oh no, we're focused on this week and this week only. It's not about SMU, it's what Pitt can do. I wonder if there would be a team that they could play this year where he'd say, actually, it is about kind of what those guys do. Like, if they played Georgia, what is the extreme there? Or if they played Oregon, I actually wonder that, Donnie. Do you think he would be like, you know, it is kind of what about Oregon wants to do here. We do have to stop what they'd like to do. I think when Pitt's playing most of the teams on their schedule, he's right to say that, but there are definitely times where that one would ring faintly ridiculous.
Yeah, there might be one of those like respect levels, I don't know, that you have with other teams or coaches, but also I think it does go back to every coach is going to say, well, if we don't execute, we don't have a chance. So I think that's where they'll go back to say it's about what we do.
Then again, though, Syracuse could easily say if we had been better, we would have not lost by four touchdowns to Pitt. Do we have Mackey? Is he jumping on video here? What an overachiever. Jason Mackey, the Post-Gazette, joins right now. He got bumped by Pat Narduzzi, but Jason, I assume you are okay with that because Pitt's 7-0. We would not have bumped you for a 4-3 Pitt team or a 3-4 Pitt team.
I'm quite all right. I'm not offended in the least. Pat can have his show. Pat can talk about big game on Saturday, man.
All right, what do you think? What do you think coming into that game? I mean, it's a huge. It's probably the biggest college football Saturday if you combine Pitt and Penn State. I can't remember a time in my lifetime. In fact, I'm almost positive there hasn't been one where each team was undefeated this late in the season. So, what do you make of Pitt's chances against pretty much the best team they've played thus far?
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome Saturday, Chris. I'm heading out to Penn State, and I agree with you. That's actually something I'm going to write about tomorrow.
You have tea and lozenges, Jason? Because I'm the one I thought was fighting a sore throat. You sound like there's several frogs living in your throat
right now.
I know.
Dude, I've got tea, I've got lozenges, I've got nose dry, I've got everything you could possibly come up with, and I still sound like this. I'm sorry.
So you're going out to Happy Valley. No, it's fine. I'm just busting chops here. You're going to Happy Valley for that game. I mean, I don't think the stakes are as high for Penn State because they can afford to lose a game and still be in very good shape. But you know there are a lot of people out there. I know because I talked to them because most of my Penn State friends have not excommunicated me for not rooting for the team. They want to beat Ohio State just on the merits of we hardly ever do this. It never seems to go our way. What do you expect in that game?
It kind of comes down to the Ohio – I agree with you, Chris, but the Ohio State game, I do think it's bigger just because of how poorly they've performed against Ohio State, against top teams, 1-9 under Franklin. I expect Penn State to – dare I say win? I think it's going to be
close.
They're
a dog,
though. I
think
it's actually going to be low scoring. I know. And the over-under is, what, 46.5? I'd actually play – I mean, that seems low, but I'd actually play the under. I think Penn State's defense is actually going to be able to somewhat handle the Ohio State offense. It comes down to the quarterback situation for me in Penn State, whether it's Drew Aller, whether it's Bo Prabula. They have to give them enough. They have to, you know, get what
they
got.
Aller didn't make any plays last year. That was the story last year. It was Aller and McCord who could suck less in that game, and both of them did a pretty bad job of it.
I know, and that was Aller's first Ohio State game at the Horseshoe. His first, like, you know, remember back to last year, man. They were dinking and dunking and not really giving him too much, and it was his first kind of real indoctrination. It did not go well, and I think he's a different quarterback this time. I've been out there a couple times, been around them a couple times. He's so much more mature. It just comes down to health. Can he move? Can he do enough to give them a split? I think he can. But you know, they've used the two quarterback system before. They've brought Bo in certain packages, but Penn State's a fun team, man. I like watching them.
Do you think that this is a Pitt team that can handle success on Saturday night against the best team they've played so far?
I do, and you know why, Chris? The offense has kind of been like, I think it's a lot better than it's been the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What they've shown defensively to me is why they can do this, and I think why they're going to stay grounded. I love the pressure Randy Bates' group has been able to get. Just frustrating. I know our buddy Kyle McCord and Pony wore it, and I loved hearing you guys talk about it. But, man, I do think Pitt's defense gives it a chance. The offense doesn't have to do too much, and I do think on the other side, that offense is much better than it's shown the past 2 weeks and probably has a lot of eagerness to improve.
Jason, we'll go rapid fire here on topics. Steelers at what I'll call the halfway point. You can't technically have a halfway point in a 17-game season, but they've got a bye week and they've got 9 games left, so good enough. Grade the Steelers as a whole for this first 8-game stretch, and then grade Mike Tomlin for the same period of time.
Steelers as a whole, I guess I'll go B+. Maybe. I mean, I think it's fairly favorable. I've liked what the defense has done. The losses, they're close. Like, I wouldn't have expected the Steelers to go, you know, 7-0, 8-0, anything crazy like that. I think Mike Tomlin has done a good job. It seems like I did my chat earlier today, and every single time somebody complains about Mike Tomlin. Chris, I was listening to you and Pony, and I think this was before the game on Monday night. There was somebody arguing that Mike Tomlin has done a poor job. Maybe this was another, but like, I think he's done a very good job. I think he saw what a lot of us didn't see in making the quarterback switch, an unpopular move at the time. I think it was absolutely the right one. At the same time, I look at the Steelers and I still see maybe some warts, maybe some depth issues. I wish they had a little bit more, maybe along the defensive line. Haven't really gotten enough from that group. The wide receiver, the second wide receiver spot, I still think they need to upgrade that, but it's a much, much different aura around this team with Russell Wilson under center.
Are you somebody with the Steelers where the Steelers are concerned who thinks that they are nearly a lock to make the postseason after starting 6-2?
I mean, I think the odds are very good. I don't think the Bengals are very good. I don't think the Browns are very good, and that's 4 of their remaining games. I think the Commanders are, you know, average to maybe slightly above average, probably the same with the Eagles. And I think the way the offense is playing, they're giving themselves a chance. They have an adult passing game. They're, you know, they've started out exactly the way you would want them to start out. You know, 6-2, and we got to talk about them, you know, winning 4 of their remaining games to get to a 10-win season, which will largely put them in the playoff conversation. Like, I think they can do that. Do I think they can win the AFC North? I think that's a little different conversation, but yeah, maybe not a slam dunk, but I think they've really upped their chances.
Should I expect the Pirates to be in on Juan Soto very soon?
He's going to listen to every team, right? Yeah, I'm sure they're preparing their bid now.
I should expect him to be wearing Pirates black and gold here shortly.
Man, unless he goes to, you know, a store around the stadium and purchases a Pirates shirt, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I've always wondered this, Chris. Do they actually formulate, you know, a pitch, an offer, a plan? Do they consider
what's your gut
that
tell you?
The least bit seriously?
What's your gut tell you to answer your own question?
Well, no. I mean, I think
they would look at that as, honestly, I'm not trying to answer this in a troll way, your question. I think they would look at that as wasted time. They'd say, like, that's time taken away from, like, making fungible plans and offers to players we're actually going to target. So that's kind of the depressing way I would answer that. All right, Jason, thank you for the time, as always. Hope the voice is recovering and that you enjoy sunny, scenic Happy Valley this weekend.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much, Chris. Have a great weekend.
Back out to the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find our good friend, the legend himself, Mr. Bob Pompiani. Hi, Bob.
Chris, how are you today?
I still have a sore throat. You and I were commiserating via text message yesterday after the sports call. I said, hey, Bob, sorry. I hope I didn't sound crappy. I have a sore throat. You said, hey, funny, so do I. I hope I didn't sound crappy. So this is a great thing for us to be doing, talking on the radio right now. But glad to hear that you can at least get words out. I'm hoping that I'll last for 4 hours here.
Well, you know, which the tricky part of this is if you get, like, excited and pump your voice a little bit, then it gets a little...
What happened, Donnie, at the end of yesterday's show or in the last hour, I got a little fired up, and then I started just hacking. And Donnie just had... I said, Donnie, I swear you're going to have to just sit here and talk and just say something because I'm literally going to have to drink a big glug of water to get my voice back. Anyway. Yes?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think this is unprecedented. I'm 39 years old, and I'm pretty sure I can say safely, because Pitt hasn't been undefeated this late into a season since the early 80s, before I was born, this has to be one of the first times in a very long time that Pitt and Penn State have both been 7-0 this late into a season. So a huge college football Saturday. Whose chances, because they're both underdogs, Penn State home dog by 3.5, Pitt 7 on the road. Whose chances do you like better to come out of this weekend still undefeated?
Well, I think Penn State Chris has their best opportunity to take down Ohio State in the last several years. I do. Just because I think they're more on level ground. I don't think that Ohio State's quarterback play has been as good. I know that Aller was kind of iffy here. I'm not sure if he's I would expect he's going to play. But I think Penn State has a chance to win that game, and if they do, they're going to be in a really prime position here. Same thing's true of Pitt, though. If you look at Pitt one by one, this game here against SMU, depending on what SMU team shows up, I don't know how they won a game with a minus six turnover ratio the other day, but they did. If they play sloppy football, Pitt will win. If they don't, I think it's going to be more difficult for Pitt to win down there. I think that team is, you know, they play still kind of it could be a track meet, but I think that if I'm going to pick a team, this may sound surprising to you, but I think Penn State has a better chance of winning at home just because I don't think Ohio State is as good as it used to be heading into these kinds of games.
Are you as annoyed as Donnie and I both are that Penn State-Ohio State game is happening at noon and not at least at 3:30 or at 7:30?
Yes, and Rich Walsh was up at the State College yesterday and asked Franklin about it, and I knew his answer would be what it was, and he just said, no, noon football is the best. Everyone loves it then, because he's never going to let that, you know, get into his heads of his players that, okay, we should be playing at night and whatever. You got to be ready for it, and he is, and they should be. But, yeah, I prefer. I'm always for big games. That's one great thing about Pitt now. They're going to be in a situation where it's later at night. They will get a lot of viewership because of it. So this will be a big, big game for them. If they win, as long as they don't mess up against Virginia, that leads to a great showdown against Clemson. So they have everything to play for here. But so does SMU, quite frankly. So that's why it'll be a really interesting game. I think high-scoring game, too.
Did Richie play Toff Trees or the Blue Course after he was done talking to Franklin?
No, it was a day trip. I'm back. I know he wanted to, but you know, especially this time of the year when it gets dark at 5, you can't do it.
Bob, give the Steelers at a de facto halfway point here this season. Give the Steelers a grade and Mike Tomlin a grade for his work so far.
Well, I'd give them an A and an A. And the reason the A for Tomlin is because he was willing to do what he wanted to do, which was put Wilson in at a time where people didn't think it was the prudent move based on how Justin Fields was playing. But he wanted to get another level out of it, and he has, I think, after a slow start for Wilson. So I think that's a bold move, one he made, and they should benefit by it, knowing he has two games under his belt now as they head into really the teeth of their schedule. The team, you know, I expect them to be, you know, at worst 5-3. So I give them an A- to say that, just because they had an opportunity with this schedule to be in good shape heading into this bye, heading into the second half of the season. It's not going to be easy moving forward, but I didn't expect it would be. So building up some collateral here in terms of how much their record is and gives them, you know, a chance to, you know, maybe lose a game or two that maybe you didn't expect because they built up a 6-2 record is very important.
Bob, I know this one's off the reservation a little bit. The Penguins are playing tonight, but I'd rather talk about the baby Penguins because even though Tristan Jarry won, he gave up a goal that I think defied the laws of physics from where the shot was taken and how it somehow got in with no screen. Do you think we are ever going to see that guy playing meaningful high-level hockey for the Penguins ever again?
I do. That may be a surprising answer for you, but I do. I think they're going to do everything they can to get him right. And yeah, I saw that goal, and it was a terrible goal. And those are the kinds of goals he's given up, ones that should never go in, and they do. But he also made three good saves in that game as well. Whatever it takes, they got to get him right because there's not much else they can do. You know, if you want to move away from him, okay, but you got a big cost there. And they're already to a point where they're paying off some other salaries here. So I don't know what it's going to take, but I believe that he will be back, and I believe that he will get to a much better level. If you look at his 20 games prior to his last 20, which have been abysmal, he had actually a pretty good save percentage and goals against average. And in those 20 games, they were a winning hockey club. So they need that Tristan Jarry and not the one we've seen most recently. But that's the problem. You can't have inconsistency. You have to be real rock solid, especially with that team giving up as many shots and odd man breaks as they do.
What's the Pompeiani House giving out for Halloween this year?
Well, we always do those big bars.
Very good.
I always feel like
all
I don't,
class,
yeah,
pop.
I don't want anyone to tell me, oh, you got cheap, and you know, I'm not doing
no,
that.
No, we're a full-size house, too. I knew you'd be all class and be giving out full-size. Good work.
Well, I think you have to, and not only that, you know, we used to, now, I'm older now, all the kids in the neighborhood are gone, but somehow, some way, we still get like 130 kids coming every year. I don't know where they come from, but they're around.
Best Halloween villain in one of the scary slasher movies?
Oh, geez. I'm going to say Jason. I mean,
that's not a ringing endorsement for the big guy.
Yeah, because I think he's not as intimidating as some would think.
He's lumbering.
Who am I thinking of with that? I can't think of who's the guy with the...
Michael Myers?
Michael Myers. That Michael Myers is the one that would really... I think that's the most intimidating one.
Pomp, one more thing. Should I dress up as my Halloween costume for the sports call tonight? I know you're probably not hosting, Richie is, but should I go as Darla from Finding Nemo, the kid with the mouthpiece and the rock and roll girl sweatshirt?
Well, first of all, I am going to be hosting, so you don't have to worry about it. I am not going to be, I can't, because I got to be on TV. I don't have enough to switch around. If you want to, that's fine. If you know, you'll get some clicks on that one for sure. Whatever it is you said, do it. I used to dress up a lot.
Bob, it is atrocious looking, this costume. And by that I mean it's very true to the character. It looks horrible.
Well then, what the heck?
All right, I'm going to
wear it. It's Halloween. Yep. The one night you could do it. And then if you're on the air New Year's, where I am, we can do some New Year's stuff too.
All right. I think that sounds good and fair, Bob. I'll talk to you tonight on the sports call. Thank you.
All right, Chris. Have a good day. See you, Donnie.
Time for a little PM Team Power Rankings. A reminder first that Mike's Beer Bar's Fan Beer of the Month is Penn Brewing's Pumpkin Shandy, and that's benefiting Young Adult Survivors United. We're big fans of Mike, big fans of Mike's Beer Bar. Go down there, have a Penn Brewing Pumpkin Shandy to benefit Young Adult Survivors United. Time for a little Power Rankings. It's Halloween. It's spooky season. What do we got here? We got the Rob Zombie remake of Halloween on the one big TV, Don. I have some sort of golf tournament on the small TV. And then we've got, Hellraiser is it? Hellraiser. Hellraiser is a creepy-ass movie, let me tell you. Some messed up stuff happens in this one.
Yeah, I don't know if he's quite to the level of some of the other big dogs, but maybe we'll find out here in a few minutes.
He's creepy. Well, we're power ranking each of us. The top five horror movie slashers, villains, whatever you want to call it. I think Donnie, in coming up with this, he more wanted to focus on the guys that are really taking a bite out of people, really getting after it. So let's just dive right in. Would you like to go first? You can go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'll go first.
I think you're the expert, and so I'm going to let you go first here.
And I think number five might surprise you because it is a little bit different than what the rest of the list will look like. But I did want to include somebody that had maybe a little bit of charisma. And,
little Riz.
Yeah, and a little bit more of a character than just, like, big guy.
Merciless killing machine.
Yeah, that just killed the hell out of people.
Yes.
So number five, I'm going to go with Hannibal Lecter.
Oh.
I had it between him and Jack Torrance from The Shining. I mean, obviously, both actors that played each role just knocked it out of the park. Two of the greatest actors in American history. So I went with him number five. Now we're getting into the...
Hello, Clarice.
we're getting into the big boys here.
Man, he is a creepy SOB in those movies. He really is.
Yeah, I think if you want somebody a little bit deeper than just your regular killer...
And I think he, honestly,
killer,
honest to God, man, I think if you put him up against most of these guys, he's winning because he's way smarter than them. He's just going to sneak up and have a knife just like, you know, he's going to, like, he disembowels people in those movies, man. He's messed up.
I am going to go, this might be a little bit low for this guy. I'm going to go Freddy Krueger at number four. I know that he's usually part of the big three. I'm not a huge fan of Freddy's game.
You've made it very clear that you're not, like, the biggest Freddy backer in the world.
Yeah, I mean, the movies are fine. I was never a fan of the whole, like, dreams thing. I understand the idea that Wes Craven was going for. I think he had, like, a bad nightmare, and that's why he made the movies. I'm pretty sure that's just what sparked everything. Robert Englund always did well in those spots,
too. Do you still have
too.
Nightmares, by the way? I can't remember
Not really.
The last... I couldn't, like... Do you have nightmares only as a kid? I've never asked anyone that. Like, I don't have nightmares.
Yeah, I can't think of the last time I had one.
No, neither can I. Like, it has to have been close to 30 years ago. I can't even tell you what it would have been. If I have dreams right now, I usually don't. They're just, they don't make any sense. They have nothing to do with anything almost all the time. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
He's certainly never in them. So I got him at number four, maybe a little bit low. I might get some hate on that one. Number three, I'm going to go with Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This guy, a bad dude. Bad dude. You don't want to be messing with this guy. They've made how many remakes of it? That's the other thing with the horror genre. You're able to just, they're all tentpole films. You're able to just make like a dozen of these bad boys if you make one of them.
Are you ready for a cheap, easy moneymaker? Do we have the franchise for you?
I mean, you pretty much put anything out there and you have like, all right, well, we got about 10 that we can put in the hopper. So he's number three. Number two is Jason Voorhees. One of the most intimidating figures in the horror genre. The big man will show off his athleticism a time or two. He won't just give you that stoic walk through the woods. Sometimes he'll hit you with a hop or a skip or a jump, and he'll be able to take people down. Plus, I think he is also like the biggest size-wise. I think I once looked it up.
Oh, he's like 6'10", four bills, probably.
Yeah, I think they had him at like 6'6", like 330 or something. A monstrous figure.
You know what I laugh at? They're like, he's a huge guy. It's like when they say that about a wrestler. Yeah, put him in, though, against an offensive lineman. Like Brock Lesnar just getting ragdolled around by like some guy named Frank that you've never heard of. Like a 6'8", guard, 325. He's a big pro wrestler. Oh, that's impressive. Here, he's just going to get absolutely pancake blocked.
We're going to put him against the late, great Larry Allen and see how he does.
Look at big Larry Allen go!
And then number one,
I already wrote it in.
My man. It's Michael Myers. I can't get with anybody else. I mean, the OG Halloween, I think, is one of... It's probably my favorite horror movie. It is one of those ones that just... started a revolution, per se. Like, you can pinpoint movies in whatever genre that really just start a wave or a craze of movies of its same kind. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you can say about the OG Halloween. And Michael Myers, he is the stoic shape. He will just walk and he'll chase you down. It's just a
he'll
walk
you down. Yeah, he'll walk you down. I told you.
You could be running for a mile, and he'll be right there behind you.
He's 3 yards in a cloud of dust. He's Army or Navy football back in the option days. He's just going to churn out yards and wear you down.
And also, I think it's pretty clear he was the inspiration that Kane and Undertaker had for some of their character moves. Yeah, the sit-up, obviously. Kane, when he first came around, he would always do the little head nod.
Can you imagine Michael Myers walking the ropes to take somebody's arm off, though? Just getting up there like the Undertaker, going old school.
Oh, yeah.
Walking the banister.
He'd just stick him right to the canvas. So there you go. Hannibal Lecter, Freddy Krueger, Leatherface, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers.
My list is going to surprise you. Number five. I'm going to go with a guy that I'm a prisoner of the moment and I'm affected by what I was just watching. And I know this is going to seal it for me with Doran right off the bat. The Candyman. What a creepy MF-er that guy was. He's got a hook for a hand. He's got bees everywhere. When he opens his big coat, he's just got rib cage exposed. He's one of those science experiment skeletons with bees everywhere. Just bees. He's making out with Virginia Madsen and putting bees down her throat. That guy is a weird dude.
I really did think about him. Plus, that's a good, like, original character,
right.
I feel.
Well, he's like a Clive Barker. It's based on something by Clive Barker, so it's based on a novel. I don't know, man. The Candyman's just kind of hanging out. There's kind of a vague, like, Dracula vibe about him, too. Like, the way he's very upright and everything. Candyman's a creepy dude. All right, this is going to surprise you. Number four, Captain Spaulding from House of 1,000 Corpses. You like that one? Malzy digging a little deep into the Rolodex.
The late, great Sid Haig.
Correct. Very creepy. You get introduced to him, two like punk-ass crooks are trying to rob him, and he is just about to drag them into the deep end, my friend. Those guys get off easy. He kills them right away.
Oh, that is a wacky movie. I mean, that and then Devil's Rejects, the sequel.
Now, do you think that I've already screwed myself here by going with, like, not Candyman so much, but Captain Spaulding's niche?
No, I wouldn't say you screwed yourself.
He is an unsettling character in those movies, man. I mean, everybody in those movies is unsettling. He is a good one, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll say this. I'll be surprised if I don't get a text from my dad giving you props for making that pick. He loves those movies, especially Devil's Rejects.
All right, I'm going to go with number three, and everyone's going to laugh at me because I think we did something like this at the beginning of the month. I'm actually omitting multiple big names in the horror genre here. I am. There are going to be a couple guys left on the cutting room floor. This is strictly what scared 10 or 11-year-old Chris Muller. That I can't get the thought of that ghost face mask out of my mind. And so I was too young to understand that all the Scream movies were, like, until I got older, sly, like, winking horror comedy. When they want Ghostface to be scary in those movies, Ghostface is very scary. That mask is creepy, based on, like, the Wilhelm scream or whatever. They just have him popping out. Also, because Craven is really good at directing this stuff, too. The jump scares are always very good with Ghostface. So, always popping out, always looking super brutal. The only thing that probably knocks him down a peg or two is, I think on, like, per film, no bad guy, like, legitimately gets their ass beat more than Ghostface. Like, he does.
I was going to say, it'll be like a teenage chick. It'll just get an elbow right in the face and, I mean, flop backwards.
But that makes him a little more realistic. You know, he's not supernatural. He's just got a nonstop motor. He's the TJ Watt of killers in these movies. You can try to chip him with one co-ed. You can have a cop shoot him. He's nothing but running on pure adrenaline, big ghosty. Number two. Leatherface, like you, I gotta put him on my list. You want to talk about just unhinged energy here. Just a big, insane dude with a chainsaw. That's it. Just chasing people. They tried to make him funny for a Geico commercial. Don't do that. Come on now. Leatherface is horrifying. Those movies, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is terrifying. Even though I want to say from recollection, not a ton of blood. It's like more of a suggested, like, uh-oh, Leatherface got another one. But him popping out with that chainsaw running, man, is terrifying. And then, number one, there was an obvious double number one here. Big Mike, you've evangelized me. Ain't nobody better than Michael Myers. Relentless. Occasionally, he'll show a little bit of a heart, briefly. He looks like he's got a couple vulnerabilities. The one, they're beating the crap out of him in the Rob Zombie remake. Everyone's taking turns just, like, whooping ass, and he still is killing people. He gets up and just starts doing his thing again. Now, do we think he is more supernatural and demonic than Jason, or is he just, again, very motivated?
I think he's a little bit more supernatural.
Okay.
Than Jason. I mean, they're close because they all, like, those dudes just always roll back. Like, that's the thing with Krueger, that he's kind of different. Like, okay, he's a dreams guy. Sometimes they can get rid of him. They pop right back. That's always the story with these guys. But, like, at the end of... I feel like his sometimes get... Well, I guess you could say it about all of them. So what am I even saying here? Like, I was going to say they all get outrageous. Like,
of course
they'll
they
get
do.
Blown to bits, and here they go. They're right back.
The entirety of Freddy versus Jason is them just killing each other over and over and shrugging it off like it's like a slap on the face.
See, that's where... It should have been Freddy and Michael there. Like, we got to have the two big boys going at it. Like, that's like irresistible force meets the immovable object. It's like Andre and Hulk
Hogan. They needed to have speed versus power. Styles make fights. All right, so my five best horror movie slasher villains are The Candyman, Captain Spaulding, Ghostface, Leatherface, Michael Myers, Donnie with Hannibal Lecter, Freddy Krueger, Leatherface, Big Jason Voorhees, and then, of course, Big Double M, Michael Myers.